Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 753. We're recording it on June 26th in the year 2025. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And joining me at that intersection, as usual, Sally Draper. How is Sally Draper?
I am awesome. How about you, Martin? You having a great day?
Good. Good, good. I'm happy summer is finally here. We had kind of a cold spring, but summer's in full swing. We sweated out the last weekend. I think you guys did too.
Yeah.
That was some brutal heat, but it's been a nice week so far. So like, I love summer.
Brutal heat. It's for the favorite. Mississippi girl, it was brutal heat, but my tolerance is a lot different than it was when I grew up in Mississippi.
I know, right?
That's for sure.
I grew up in California in the heat. I mean, I remember years of 100-degree temperatures in the Sacramento area. And they'll say, well, it's a drier heat. But it's hot. Hot's hot. So
that's true. That's true. I'm hoping for cool temperatures this weekend. My husband and I are doing a craft fair for the first time ever, and we're looking forward to that experience. It's been just a little side hobby kind of thing, and we thought there's a craft fair a half a block away from us in the park nearby, and so we thought we would put our table out and see what happens. So,
awesome. What are the hours so people that are in the area can get over there?
Oh, it's only from 11 to 3, just a little short Saturday event. It's called the North Mankato Art Splash. And so looking forward to it.
So you people in southeastern Minnesota-ish area, that's the place to be on Saturday.
There will be llamas, I promise.
Right. Can't promise a Wells discount, but there'll be good stuff there.
There you go.
Well, best of luck with that. That sounds like fun. So
yeah.
Good, good, good. All right, let's do show 753, shall we? We are in the midst of our summer series, and we are kind of focusing on little tidbits of advice from different experts in different fields, some related to pure technology, others to content, which is kind of where we're going to live today, from some of our favorite people. And this came from our friends at Concordia Technology Solutions. They published a blog post entitled "Writing Church Announcements People Actually Read." So this isn't as much about technology. Technology is obviously the delivery vehicle, but that delivery vehicle is nothing without good content that goes into it. So whether that's an e-newsletter or an email or a text message campaign or whatever it is, the content needs to be good. So Sally, you want to start us off, and we'll walk through kind of step by step what the blog post talks about as far as suggestions for writing these good announcements.
Sure. I think a really great place to start is to keep it short, which should make it really easy to write announcements, because you're not asked to write a 5-page document on the topic. You're asked
for... Nor is anybody going to read it.
Short. Important details that you need to share. So be very specific and include, you know, date, time, and place for sure. And make sure it has everything that they need, but not overdoing, you know, the content around that. A good way to think about doing your announcements is calling them to action, having them have something they need to do around that announcement, like get registered or mark your calendar or whatever it may be. But just be very specific, I think, is probably the best advice out there.
Yeah, don't, I guess I've experienced this a lot lately since I've been in a leadership position in our congregation, and usually have something in the bulletin, something in the announcement, something in the newsletter. And it is not easy to write a kind of a gripping, attention-grabbing announcement. One thing that I was thinking about as I was preparing for the show, which we didn't write down in our pre-show notes, is that I believe, and I'm guilty of this, is just running the same announcement, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks in a row, probably not the best way to grab somebody's attention. Change it up. There are different ways to rewrite it. There are different ways, different things you can highlight in a particular announcement, but just to rerun the same announcement 4 weeks in a row, somebody's going to look at that and say, well, I saw that last week and they're not even going to read it. So rewriting it, and this is where I think AI can help.
I was thinking that same thing.
Were you? Or just run it through AI and say, give me 3, 4 different versions, highlight this, or, you know, give it a little bit different tone, or maybe tweak who the audience might be for this one. I think that is a perfect use of AI. So, yeah, change it up. Make sure that you've got good quality information. If you're still waiting on information, you know, be clear about that. But maybe that's even a good sign that you're not ready quite to announce it if you don't have all the specifics. Like, more information to come is usually not a very helpful statement.
Yeah, you want to maybe just make it a save the date or something if it is not all fleshed out yet. But but yeah, I like that thought of rewriting and hitting different target audiences and everything. I can say that I'm kind of guilty of being dulled to announcements that are just repeated over and over again. I just don't, I glance over them. And, you know, the opportunity to read these announcements is typically a pretty short window, because if it comes with the bulletin, people are going to glance at it maybe beforehand, or if you're lucky, a little bit after church. But for the most part, their eyes are on it. You want to draw them in. I actually have a screenshot, or not a screenshot, a PDF. I'm going to quick share my screen for those that are watching, of the announcement page that's in our bulletin each week here at St. Paul's in North Mankato. And they use a lot of different kind of format techniques for the announcements. So they have the announcements grouped into sections. They have worship and learn and reach out. And then they have a section that's actually called announcements. And then they use bolding and underlining and kind of bulleted list and things like that to help format-wise to draw you into the announcements that are being shared. So I think the format can have a big impact as well.
Yep. A couple other bits of advice from the blog post and our own experience is be a storyteller. Give it enough context and enough personality that it reads more like a story, that there's an end, there's a point to it, there's a takeaway, there's something memorable in the announcement. And that's a trick to when you want to keep it short as well. But people like reading stories, and when you can personalize it, I think that's all the better. Another piece of advice is avoid insider language. So acronyms that maybe even the average member might not know. So whatever your youth group is called, or your VBS campaign, or your ladies ministry group, or whatever, probably have some cute names and some acronyms that have been applied to it over the years. Make sure that that is at least explained on a fairly regular basis. So check for that insider language, and read it maybe with an eye toward, this is the first time you've been there and you're not quite sure what all the things mean. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, kind of springing off that idea, Martin, sometimes things don't get announced that are insider things. Like, for instance, maybe choir practice has always been the same time every week. You know, you start after Labor Day and you end with Memorial Day, and you really, everybody knows the drill. You don't have to announce the choir starting up again, except not everybody knows the drill. Again, that's kind of an insider's thing. And so it is good to go ahead and announce things and not expect everybody to just know what's going on. Invite people to your insider groups that have existed forever, or whatever it may be.
Yep. Another bit of advice is to use all the channels at your disposal. Some people prefer one channel over another. Some people read every word of a newsletter. Some people read no words of a newsletter. Some people pay more attention to live announcements. Some are paying more attention to the Facebook group or the website or the weekly email that comes in. So it does not hurt to have that announcement or that piece of information, encouragement, call to action in all the places. So it's important to kind of consider that. And then finally, I don't know if this was in the article, but my experience is have an editorial process so that it's not just you writing an announcement or whoever, one person, and then in it goes to whatever channel that you're providing it. It's always good to have somebody else or groups of people that are taking a look at it, maybe catching things that you didn't catch or, you know, offering clarifying questions that maybe you didn't address. Just a couple sets of eyes are never a bad thing to put on something that's going to be read by a lot of different people potentially. So you might want to take some time and some care and don't just throw it in there at the last minute with nobody else, you know, having some eyeballs on it.
Good point. The Concordia article that you referenced at the beginning actually finishes up with creating guidelines, which we've been talking about different guidelines and things. But one that they mentioned that we hadn't touched on yet was limit your announcement to X number of words, perhaps 100 words or something. That speaks to that, keeping it short and to the point. But if you actually, you know, make it a guideline, we're not going to publish anything unless it's less than 100 words or whatever, then it makes you a little more conscious of that short and to the point goal that you have. So and
again, AI might be helpful there too, because you can tell.
AI do the sweating for you, especially if you don't enjoy writing that much, but you know you have to do this announcement responsibility. So
exactly right.
Good All idea. Right.
Good. So we will put this article in the show notes with the example I think that you shared. We're going to put that in there as well. And there are a lot of different advice out there, but I think that this is at least a good start to pay attention to this and kind of ramp up your game for the upcoming church year. It's when a lot of the announcements are beginning to get rolled out, August, you know, back to school and all the stuff that's coming up in the church year. So thought that would have been
Martin,
a good topic.
Do you know the surefire way to keep a secret at church?
Is this a dad joke?
It might be.
Put it in the newsletter?
Exactly. Put it in the bulletin. That's what I have to share with you. Hopefully that isn't true of your announcements, but yeah. Actually, okay. I can give credit to my boss, Dan Retzloff, for sharing that one-liner with me
He was a congregation president. He probably lived that reality too. Yes. All right. Very good. Let's move on to our tips and picks of the week. What does Sally bring to the table today?
Well, mine is actually an article I read from Lifehacker recently, and it's about Gemini's hidden superpower. So if you didn't think AI had enough superpowers, here's a new one for you maybe you aren't aware of. And what it's talking about is a feature in the settings of Google's Gemini AI. And what it allows you to do is kind of train the AI to who you are. It's kind of sharing information about what you like or whatever. It's called Safe Info. And if you're in Gemini and you go to the settings gear, there's an option there that says saved info in the settings. And when you land on that page, it says info you asked Gemini to save, share info about your life and preferences to get more helpful responses. Add new info here or ask Gemini to remember something during a chat. There's a link where you can show examples, and they give examples like use simple language and avoid jargon. So you can add that as something you want Gemini to do in all of its responses to you. Or, I'm a vegetarian. Don't suggest recipes with meat. If that's a problem for you, they always give you recipes with meat, then you can just tell it, this is who I am and this is what I want from you. When trip planning, include the cost per day. Or, I prefer short, concise responses. Whatever it may be, you can store there to make it kind of a rule that Gemini lives by as it works with you on your account with Google Gemini. So I thought that was a pretty interesting thing. From the article, I pulled out a couple of prompts that they suggested might be helpful to people. So I'm just going to add a new prompt. Let's see. This one says, if a prompt begins with cover letter, create a draft of a cover letter in the canvas. A cover letter should be no more than 3 paragraphs. If the prompt includes a person's name, address the letter to that person. If the prompt includes skills, then incorporate the skills mentioned after that into the context of the letter. Sign all cover letters as Sally Draper. And so I could just save that on my Gemini account. And anytime I start a cover letter with that, you know, catchphrase, cover letter that I gave it, it's going to apply those rules every single time. So it's kind of a shortcut productivity thing to set up this type of rules for you. It can do things related to your smart home. If that's all plugged into your Google account, they have a prompt example that says, if you type movie time, then turn off the overhead lights and turn on the TV or whatever. You know, it's up to you how you want to structure it. You might have it do some grammar checking for you automatically. If it includes grammar check in the prompt anywhere, then, you know, make grammatical corrections and give me a copy of it in the Google Canvas. So I thought it was a neat little trick and worth maybe investing a little time if you're a Google Gemini user to kind of train it on your expectations, what you'd like to receive from Gemini. And yeah, maybe a little different than the examples they gave of short and concise responses. You can get more detailed and be more specific, give it keywords and things like that. So pretty cool stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. I'm going to share my screen real quick here too, because I have put some things in Gemini. And one of them I would recommend everybody do. And it simply says, whenever I ask a question, and after you provide an answer, suggest a better version of the question and ask me if I would like to use it instead.
That's
so at
good,
the end of all
advice.
Of the answers I receive, then I get maybe a way to get better responses from Gemini itself. And then the other thing that I always put in here is who I am, who I work for, give it a little bit of information about what I work with day to day. And it usually depends on the question I ask, but we'll usually say, well, you as chief technology officer of Wells would be interested in or might want to know about or et cetera. So it's actually pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. And I'm pretty sure in a way you just one-upped me because you're already using my pick of the week that I just learned about. So thanks, Martin.
Well, use it in good health. It's good stuff. Yeah. They don't all do that. Now, maybe ChatGPT does. I don't know if Perplexity does. I've got to investigate that. So they probably all have different forms or different ways to do this. But all right, very good. Mm-hmm. My pick is kind of also from Google. And this would be for Google Messages users. So if you use an Android phone, especially Pixels, but you would run across this in the OnePlus line and the Galaxy line as well, where you can identify Google Messages as your SMS platform. And if you do, there is a way to interact with those messages on the web. So Google Messages on the web is my pick, and it is a very easy thing to set up. So essentially what you do is you go to a URL, you either scan a QR code or log into your Google account, and ultimately you have your entire Google Messages application that lives usually on your phone right in your web browser. So, well, what's the point of that? Well, one of the reasons that I really like that option, and iPhone users probably recognize the value of this too if they use a Mac, that you can use your keyboard and you can type out longer messages and you can cut and paste and all the things that us older generation folks have trouble, you know, getting into a little small keyboard and screen on your phone. Now you've got the expanse of a web browser and the tools that are available to you there. And then you don't always have to be working on your phone. You can work within the context of your web browser with contacts and all the stuff that goes there too. So this is a really cool thing. You know, iMessage users who use a Mac can see the value in that. And now Android users can do the same where it's just a web-based view of your Google Messages. So pretty cool.
Really nice that you took care of Android users and iPhone users that use a Mac.
Right.
I'm an iPhone
user.
iPhone
users that use Windows have fewer options. I think there's maybe an iCloud tool, I want to say. So if you log into your iCloud account and you've turned this on in your phone, I think you can do the same thing. Somebody will have to verify, or I'll verify that before the next show. I'm pretty sure that's the case. It's not as clean and elegant as I think this Google Messages approach, because you can do it from any browser on any computer. It does not matter where you are. So pretty cool.
Yeah, I often want to just get back to the text contents mm-hmm. on my computer so that I can use a link from it or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm emailing myself that information,
right.
Which seems really, of a circular.
So Facebook Messenger people realize
right.
that you can do this. You can do it on the phone or you can do it in your browser. Mm-hmm. That's helpful too. So, all right. It's my tip of the week. Community feedback is up next. And the first piece of feedback I want to provide was from Paul Patterson. He is one of the great folks in our Christian or Lutheran schools office.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at the AI summit with us and very interested in that topic. And he shared with me something that I hadn't heard of before, which I think is a great resource to share with you all. And that is a site called AIforEducation.io. And it has all kinds of things for school faculties or Area Lutheran high schools, or I think a lot of our schools would be able to take advantage of all the AI resources here. Downloadable resources. They have a 2-hour free AI course. They have webinars. They have curriculum suggestions. They have all kinds of classroom resources, policy development, step-by-step plans for implementing AI, both at the administrative level, but also in the classroom level. They have sample policies, information for parents, just a whole bunch of things related to AI in education. So all totally free. So I would suggest at least checking this out if you are interested in what is out there for AI in education resources. Good time over the summer to take a look at this and see what might be helpful when you're doing orientation, when you're doing lesson planning. All those things are going to be helpful to you. So thank you to Paul Patterson for sharing that. AIforEducation.io. Take a look.
Yeah, I'm just looking at one section of their downloadable resources, and it's pretty deep. There's so much here.
This nicely
is
done.
Just about prompt engineering, and they have categories for special ed, social emotional learning, professional development, lesson planning, and categories for students. And I'm just mm-hmm. seeing a few of the things that are under for students, but it goes on and on, all kinds of things that just students can use as examples for prompt engineering. So, excited to find this resource. I think this will be a real blessing to teachers and school mm-hmm. districts and
yep.
schools.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got, Sally? Something community feedback?
Yeah, just wanted to make mention that Google's changing their policies, and it's related to Google Gemini, which we talked about before, as well as the Notebook LM product where you can feed it resources. And basically, those things are going to become available for all ages. And so no cap at 13 or 18 years old or anything like that, where if you're on the Google platform using Google, the Google
Workspaces.
There you go, Workspaces. Mm-hmm. It's going to be opt out instead of opt in, basically. At this point, it had been you had to turn on that capability for your younger students, but now it's going to be turned on for everybody, and you can opt out if you so desire. So we have some help articles from Google, and then just kind of some different opinions that are out there. There is a Google family link where families can opt in or opt out, but basically this is coming, and you need to just be aware of what that means, and maybe, you know, be transparent about the fact that it's going to be there, and let your parents react to that, or, you know, be aware of that at least, because I think some people maybe don't want their children using AI. And so not having the discernment to check everything it says or whatever it may be the case, just some concerns around the potential of it being turned on for younger children. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, we've got lots of good links here. And again, this is a new change. And I think in most circles, probably a good change, where they have paid attention to the need that AI might be a good thing, or an assisted, you know, a nice assistant to have, even for the younger kids. So they've made some changes, homogenized its approach in some respects, made it a safer place. So take a look. All right, Sally, I think that's going to about do it. If you would like to be a part of the Wells Tech conversation, we would love to have you join us via a comment, or any other way that you'd like to contribute to the show would be awesome. Go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. You'll see all of our shows, all 753 of them represented there in some way, shape, or form. You can comment on any show. You can use the links at the top to find all the social places we are and participate there. Or you can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net is the way to do that. So we'd love to have you join the conversation and be a part of our dialogue, and help us to figure out how to help everybody else. So I think that's going to about do it. We will continue our summer series the next time we get together. So we're looking forward to 754, and we will see you then. Bye-bye.